Welcome to Vancouver True Crime. I'm here with John, Urban Tactics Krav Maga. So John, thank you for coming on and maybe tell me a little bit about your studio, kind of martial arts that you provide, and maybe a little bit about your background and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with my background. I'm born and raised actually in Richmond, BC. And I always wanted to do martial arts when I was younger, but my parents only knew karate. And I'm like, I don't want to do karate. I want to do something else. And there weren't many options. So unfortunately for me, I had to sort of put it off until I was an adult. And I started doing Krav Maga under originally IKMF, which is one of the big organizations, in 2008. I did that for about a year because I was preparing to move to Israel to join the military there. I did that from 2009 to 2011, give or take. I served as an infantryman in the Givati regiment. I was also a trained light machine gunner and sniper.
Wow.
Not fancy sniper, not a scout sniper, just basic Overwatch. And I actually ended up spending most of my time in the military there doing police work, roadblocks, arrests, foot patrols, which ironically we were not actually trained for police work. We were trained for military work, but that's the idea. I came back because I'm too Canadian to live in Israel, and I started training Krav Maga again with some of my former instructors as well as new instructors, and I'd been requested by a few people to become an instructor myself, and I ended up starting teaching with a friend of mine at the time, and it turned out something that I like to do. And I started doing that in 2012, I believe. Also, I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at the time. And I've been teaching Krav Maga since then. And Urban Tactics Krav Maga was founded in 2013 officially. So I've been teaching it about 10 years. I'm also now Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt. I've dabbled and trained in boxing, kickboxing, you know, Arnis, Jeet Kune Do, just on the side, just to sort of explore, not in any serious fashion. Krav Maga is my specialty, Krav Maga being Israeli self-defense, originally developed for the survival of the Jewish people in Israel and the military, and since about the 90s, it's gone global. Lots about Krav Maga is true, and lots of myths out there about Krav Maga as well, but it's essentially a no-nonsense approach, simple approach to teaching self-defense, because self-defense is very different than martial arts, and it's a line that it's hard for people to understand the difference.
Well, let me break that down then. Let's break down then Krav Maga versus, say, learning kickboxing, and then Krav Maga versus Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is probably the most popular martial art to the UFC and things like that. And then what you said, what's the difference between martial arts and being in a situation on the street that you might find yourself in?
Yeah, okay. I'll just maybe talk about a little bit about the history of Krav Maga. Just very brief is that
it was
created out of necessity. It's actually original modern Krav Maga was created by a guy named Emil Lichtenfeld in then Bratislava, when the Nazi party was coming to rise, and all of a sudden the local police were not friendly to the Jews, and he had to start helping people train. And his base was actually boxing and boxing and wrestling. He was a wrestling champ. So that is just like Bruce Lee. That was kind of like a core part of and he ended up in Israel in 1948 when the Israel was created, and he was invited to hand-to-hand combat program. And you have a limited time training soldiers. You have maybe a week or 2 weeks for infantry at the most in hand-to-hand combat. I think back then they spent a little bit more time than they do now to train them and all sorts of stuff. They needed like to cut out the nonsense.
Right.
We need to teach you what works for you guys. And, you know, there wasn't much theory per se behind it. It was just trial and error.
Right. And
forward all the way to now, what they creating was a system that's essentially an exposure therapy for the nervous system. So the way they train is very militaristic, even when it's civilian, is that you have train your, not just techniques. Techniques are important, but techniques under stress. Even the stuff I teach, it will fail if you're tired or whatever. And what they realize is how you train is just as important as you train. And that I need to train your nervous system not to panic and go what I call cold black. You don't want to have a freeze moment.
So you need to
safely so that your nervous system is exposed to it and doesn't panic under stress. And that, in many ways, is the difference between Krav Maga and self-defense systems. If they're just doing techniques, it's not Krav Maga.
Right. So if they're just drilling on a heavy bag, for example, and like what you're saying, it's like sometimes in a, like, cause I, my background for as far as like violent situations was working as a doorman at a nightclub. And like what you said is true. Like you, people will get like, if they get into a very stressful situation, they either get an adrenaline rush where they go crazy or they freeze. They completely freeze. They look like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah. Quite a common response. And that's a part of what we want to train. We want you not to have that response. Even if you haven't mastered the techniques that I've taught you, because that takes a lifetime. There's a bit of a myth that Krav Maga, you can learn really quickly. Well, the techniques I can show you and you can pick them up pretty quickly as compared to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which takes forever. But the mastery is the same as any other skill set. If you're truly want to learn to defend yourself, you got to be lifestyle, like once a week for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say you can't do 6 months of Krav Maga and be successful defending yourself. You can. Six months of Jiu-Jitsu, it's going to be hard unless you're a naturally gifted athlete or a lot of other martial arts. And comparing it to martial arts, a lot of martial arts nowadays have been modified to be oriented towards sport. Jiu-Jitsu, great example. It was originally
judo versus jiu-jitsu. Judo is more of an Olympic sport and probably modified more for, you know, competitions, where jiu-jitsu was more like different techniques, but kind of based on the same thing.
Well, Brazilian jiu-jitsu originally started in Brazil. It was brought there originally by Count Maeda from Japan, who was like the tail end of the samurai, if you will. And, he was teaching them, you know, there was grappling. It included judo, jiu-jitsu and swordplay. Originally the Japanese style is like what it meant to be a samurai, but they, Julio Gracie originally, being a smaller guy, created what's called the clothes guard on the bottom. And the idea behind that as a self-defense approach was that if they're bigger than you, physics wins. By pulling them down to the ground, I hold them in the guard, I can mess them up. Here's the thing. That worked amazingly back in the day when nobody knew anything, because back then the only people who were trained were wealthy people, the people wealthy people played or paid or trained soldiers. Nowadays, and jiu-jitsu is phenomenal, and I recommend everybody do it, because as a base style, just like judo, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, I recommend even my own students do it, and I require it for my advanced students, actually. But it forgets, it causes this mental state that it's okay to go to the ground.
Right.
And you don't want to be there, because weapons and multiple opponents. No, forget the whole broken glass needles thing, right? That's not the most common. I'm more worried about I take them down, I double leg them, I pull guard, whatever, and I'm messing them up, and I'm just about to choke them out, and they grab that knife out of the back pocket and stab me to death. So the idea that going to the ground sometimes is necessary, but it should be a last resort, or it should be your job, as in you're a police officer who needs to arrest someone and you have to take them down. But
And you're putting them down in an armbar, handcuffing kind of thing. Backing up a minute there, because he brought up some really good points. So for the listeners, like, who say maybe they have no idea about martial arts, right?
Yeah.
So Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu also has a lot of standing techniques as well, but the main crutch of it is ground fighting, just like wrestling and stuff like that. Just for someone who maybe they never heard of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu before. In a lot of the videos I get sent, and they're horrific, I talked to you a little bit about it, John. They're swarming videos, or just someone getting blindsided, bear spray, taunted, being forced to do all this disgusting stuff, and then kicks to the head. In a situation like that, what would be the best situation? Like, how do you protect yourself in a swarming situation? I know I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but it kind of pertains to why we don't want to go on the ground generally, right?
Simple answer without any training. Assuming you don't freeze, which a lot of people are going to do without training to compensate, the best thing you can do is cover your head and face and vitals and run. Mm-hmm. You're going to take some hits, you're going to get kicked, you're going to get punched. Protect your head and face so you don't get knocked out, and run. Too many people will freeze. Women will freeze and stay there. Guys will freeze and stay there, or guys will get their ego in their head and be like, I have to fight back. I got to fight back.
Right. Don't be a pussy kind of feeling.
Instead of just running, at a minimum, create some space, because what if you don't see the weapon there or the friend there and you're just so overwhelmed? Even if you want to fight, you need to create some space.
Yeah.
If you're caught off guard, that is. If you saw it coming from a mile away, well, you should have already run, but you should have been prepared for conflict if that was your chosen option, which is actually something Kramaga realized. You can't always run. Running is ideal, but what happens when you can't run?
Right.
And that's what a large percentage of our training focuses on. I can tell you to run. Hey, run. But I need to train you for when you can.
Right. Yeah, it's scary because, again, you know, these situations now in our modern, like, you know, back in the day, generally I could see conflicts coming. Someone's agitated, their voice is raised, they start an argument, their posture, you know, maybe swelling the chest out, you know. And, you know, if you had any kind of common sense, you could kind of see it coming and either just de-escalate it or get the hell out of there or go toe-to-toe. Those are your options. But a lot of these situations now, it's like, unfortunately, it's people being hit in the head behind. A lot of women, too. Like on my platform, I get testimonials of these horrible situations. And I think the most important to really stress, you probably agree with this, is being aware of your surroundings, who's around you, what kind of people are, their body language, their maybe guessing their intent, maybe. It's scary, right? Because it seems that this is on the increase.
Yeah, situational awareness, as they call it, is extremely important. It's in some ways it's hard to train. It's more about like I just have to remind my students, like, if something doesn't feel right, you should be alert. And I follow it's not from Krav Maga, but it's the Jeff Cooper color code. It's actually from a U.S. A colonel. But it's basically what is your mental state at any given time? And this actually applies to mental health too. So it goes white, which is relaxed. So if you're in white, you're like chilling. You can be snuck up at any time. It doesn't matter how skilled you are. You're not paying attention. Yellow is relaxed alert. It's you're aware. Like, hey, what's that footsteps behind me? And you're just checking out. Hey, there's a person there. Hey, there's the door there. Whatever. You're paying attention, but you're like totally calm. Orange is you've identified a threat. So I see the person who's acting strangely. I see a weapon. I feel uncomfortable. Red, you're actively fighting physically. Mm-hmm. And black is you frozen. And if you want to pair that to the mental health aspect, so if I'm walking around and I think everyone's a threat all the time, I'm in paranoia, well, your nervous system is actually in orange. Is there an actual threat or is it a perceived threat? And the body doesn't know the difference. If you think there's a threat, even if there's no threat, you will react as such and behave as such, which actually can make situations worse.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that too, where someone, if there's a bit of a threatening situation, someone goes in all guns blazing and it just, it takes a bad situation into a terrible situation. Absolutely.
So it's, and what you were to touch on what you're saying, and this is where I'll get in trouble because people just don't like to talk about this stuff in the current environment, is that, you know, back in the day in a place like Canada, and you're a few years older than me, I think. So when I grew up, it was starting to be very multicultural. But farther back, it was a much more homogeneous culture. And so when you have one type of ethnic group as the vast majority, regardless of what it is, you grew up with the social mannerisms and behaviors and expectations of that group. And so your body re-picks up on body language cues of that group a lot easier. Yeah. So when I grew up is when the influx of the Hong Kong migrants started coming. So a lot of Cantonese speakers and then Mandarin speakers growing in Richmond. And, you know, now we have the, you know, Indo-Canadians and you have Southeast Asians and we have all this stuff. There's that where if you don't grow up with all the different cultures all the time, your ability to read the subtle body language is not there. And the idea that And while we want to live in a respectful community, the idea that at a biological level, everyone can pick up on all the different cultural differences.
No, it's impossible.
Really hard.
And
it'll create communication errors. What's not offensive in one group is super offensive in another group.
Oh, totally.
Then you throw in the mental health issue, which governments in all Western countries have completely dropped the ball because ideological nonsense and just not taking practical approaches. So now you got mentally ill people, which in Vancouver specifically is makes up for a large percentage of the assault. You have cultural differences and communication errors, which create often ego-driven issues. And then if particular communities, and this is a global thing, not specific here, the lower-income communities where people feel more destitute are going to be more violent. This is, yeah. shouldn't be a revelation to people.
No, because again, you know, it's just for working in a bar. Bar is a kind of interesting microcosm of all these things that he talked about. One of my craziest nights was Jamaican dudes on one side of the bar, and then the Indo-Canadian guys on the other bar, ready to kick off
and that's a fun mass day.
Violence, and then stupid me's in the middle, like, hey, everyone, calm down. And, yeah, you just get the hell out of the way. But, and again, too, I think that you add an element to it. You got different ethnicity groups, right, that, you know, every ethnic groups have, you know, scholars, and they also have scoundrels, no matter what ethnic group it is. But then you also get young men and testosterone, and you get these young men testosterone different ethnic groups. Sometimes if different ethnic groups, regardless across the board, it's not going to clash. It's going to clash, right? You know, someone says something they perceive as racist, the other group will get pissed off, and then it's like up the, I've seen that a million times, you know? So yeah, things can kick off. And then like what you're saying is if you're kind of going from a naivety kind of perception, you know, it's not the rainbow coalition out on the real world. You know, we might want it to be in social media and that sort of thing and in HR offices. But in the real world, you know, unfortunately, people have differences. People don't see eye to eye. People have different cultural and considerations. And people handle problems differently, too. Some people are more prone to using violence to handle their problems. Some people are more, you know, you get across-the-board reaction. So one has to prepare for, you know, different experiences of different people, I guess, what you're saying.
Yeah. And you touched on, you know, a lot of women feel unsafe. And that there's a legitimate reason for that is let's say there are predatory behavior out there. And I should say is that the media and Netflix with like the Jeffrey Dahmer series, they make it seem like that level of predator is everywhere. But that level of predator is actually quite rare. Those are the people who are just like serial killer murderers, like just do it because they feel good or whatever. It's actually very uncommon.
Yeah,
you're more likely to be attacked by someone you know, or someone you know trust, because a lot of people trust people that they shouldn't.
Right.
And in downtown Eastside, it's mentally ill people, and like with the let's say someone's having a schizophrenic break, and you just happen to be in front of them, it doesn't really matter to them how big you are. They're going to attack you if they're feeling violent. But normally, non-predators are still going to act by predators, I mean human predators, they're still going to act in a predatory fashion, which is if the target is easier and if I think I'm not going to get hurt as much, I'm more inclined to be violent. So women and small men are easier targets. This is what 6'5", you know, 280-pound guys outside of the bar situation are probably not getting attacked on the street.
No, and if someone does think, oh, that's a tough guy to tangle with, I'll move on. Right?
But women, I tell, you know, women cops are, and unfortunately we had that situation the other day, are disproportionately getting assaulted because they're an easier target for people who hate cops already are going to see I can get revenge now, I'm bigger than them. And unfortunately for the police in that case, they're thrown under the bus by our politicians and the public perception by not getting them sufficient training. The training for them who are going to be exposed to violence is as far as I'm concerned, non-existent. But for the average person who isn't being dictated how to train and what to train, the reality is, if you're smaller, woman or man, I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'6", like 160 pounds. And this being this small as a self-defense instructor, actually, and I'm not athletically gifted at all. I have to train like crazy if I want to even keep up with those monsters that are the friends of mine who are athletes. You have to realize that you need a considerably higher skill level as a smaller person.
Oh, for sure.
To do half the stuff that you think you can do. And when I'm even demonstrating with some of my students who are like, you know, getting up in the 200-pound range, if they even resist a little, even in demonstration, I often just sort of let go because my only option is to 100% go crazy because of my size compared to
right. them. So you have to go full throttle. Just
and I'm not going to do that to my students. Yeah. I'm not like that.
No.
Because they're going to get hurt if I go. Or I'm going to get hurt because they're bigger than me. It's physical.
Yeah.
So when you're a smaller individual or a woman, your situational awareness matters.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
As well as your willingness to be assertive. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about being just a mean, horrible person. I'm talking about being assertive.
But using your voice, your eye contact.
Body language, making it clear for witnesses, hey, you're in my personal space.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of women still don't want to say no or get away from me. And you have to, especially if there's witnesses. And then if violence is on the table, when mm-hmm. you're smaller, you have to be willing to commit extreme violence
yes.
in that moment. I'm not talking about lethal force. I'm talking about so much force.
No, protecting yourself.
Yeah, to get them off. And I was talking about, students were asking me about biting people in self-defense. My Israeli instructors will be like, yeah, bite people. Now, this is a contentious issue for me because let's say you're in the downtown East Side, I wouldn't bite those people.
Hepatitis, yeah.
I'm not in a million years. And the other thing is I often remind people is like, oh yeah, I'm going to tell you to bite. But do you have it in you to bite? Because a lot of my students do not.
It's not for the faint heart. It's kind of savage, right?
No, I know I'll bite if I have to, and I don't care, and I'll do it. But
like, I'd probably bite someone if they were trying to choke me out, and they say they kind of had a half headlock on me, and their arm was, you know, like they, you know, you're just doing whatever you had to do because you know you choke out, you're strangled, you're unconscious, and you're pretty vulnerable, right? But to go out and just grab someone like Hannibal Lecter style, you know, it's not for the faint of heart.
It's not for everyone.
Just to back up on some, made some good points. So I just really want to hammer these in, especially for the female audience listening. So again, I've worked with a lot of like women and bars and the workplace. I've had female bosses that were very dominant, very powerful. They got their point across very clearly and they weren't big, you know, athletic women. I found for women learning assertive skills, if some guy, some creeps near you, hey, you're in my personal space, like you're saying, making it clear to them that whatever they're doing or behavior is inappropriate. So they're kind of like, you know, back off. So then if the person cross over, then their intention's clear. It's not that, I think a lot of times, some women are too nice. They give mixed signals and then the creep will use the mixed signals. Well, she didn't say no. She didn't say this. She didn't say that. She was friendly. She was smiling. A lot of times, you know, you're in an awkward situation. You're smiling because you're thinking it's like it's going to de-escalate the situation. And sometimes to de-escalate a situation is being firm and being, you know, using a stern voice, eye contact, even your hands, like, you know, you're like, buddy, you're drunk. You had too much to drink. Stay back. Right. Or something like that. Right. So you're creating like a line for them to cross, so to speak.
Do you care if I swear on this?
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're assertive, and it could be because the guy just simply lacks social skills. And I can speak for myself. Like, I didn't have strong male role models growing up. And I wasn't bad at all, but I don't know what women want or don't want, and you're trying to figure it out on your own. So for a lot of guys, it's genuinely bad social skill. And other ones, sometimes it is a cultural thing where in their country, like in France, people catcall a lot more, my understanding.
Right.
Some of the women there like it, while it's here, people don't like it.
No.
Now,
yeah.
You have to be expecting that if you're assertive with a guy, like, hey, get out of my personal space, I'm like, please. And you're loud, not screaming, but loud, so that other people can hear, you might be called a bitch.
Yeah.
And you can say whatever you want about that's correct, that's incorrect. I don't care. You just be like, so what? Get out of my space.
Yeah.
You know, I've had some hurts, both students and friends, women, who had some really messed up situations. And in some cases, family issues, all they had to do was tell someone else, and they didn't, because you know what happens in family issues is it gets messy.
Or you
just didn't say no, not to make a fuss, and then afterwards they're very upset about the thing, and all they had to do is say no. And I know it seems like a hard thing to do, But you have to make it clear, like clear. Yeah. And sometimes, and this sounds weird because I have some friends in some interesting communities, sometimes no doesn't mean no. So let's say a guy, and this is more sexually oriented, but let's say a guy has been with a woman who likes that aggressive side to things.
Right.
And that's
right.
their main experience. And then they're now with a new woman or girl or whatever, age appropriate, of course. The new girl is like, say, just for sake, more vanilla and has never experienced right. that. And the guy comes in and his only experience is with someone who likes something more aggressive and then they're being aggressive. Well, that new girl can perceive that as assault.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily better. So that's why you have to be like, hey, I don't like that. Like, I'm not into that. Like, no, because everyone's different. They have different expectations and standards. And that applies more to the sexual realm. That's why it gets really confusing. But on
for sure. So, like, in the dating, so let's put this up then, like, just for the listener. So in a situation where, let's say, a woman's walking down the street, just getting out of her office, you know, maybe she goes and has a drink at a lounge after just to, you know, decompress from work, wants to be left alone, just wants her drink, and guys are like, hey, baby, you know, that. You know, sometimes, you know, I back in the day when I was younger, you know, I'd politely ask a girl out or something and she says, no, I'm cool. Okay, cool. I'm not going to, that's just me though. She's not interested. Yeah. There's other women, you know, leave her alone, right? Other guys will just keep, no means yes, as you were trying to kind of saying in that situation. So then that situation, I believe it's important for a woman to really stand her ground, be very adamant that this is not appropriate. Doesn't want to have anything to do with this person. If it's in the parking lot and it's scarier, then even more animated, whatever, if you scream, yell, get the F away from me, whatever you have to do. In a dating context, like you were saying, you know, especially in the beginning of a relationship when it's romantic and there's kind of like that honeymoon phase. And sometimes people may do something that they're not really comfortable with, and that person thinks, oh, that's okay, and then it goes to an escalated level, and then she thinks, hey, this guy is assaulting me, right? So I think in that case, it's very important to have an adult conversation of where people's comfort level is. So even for the guy's sake, he thinks it's okay, but then she's out telling his friends, oh, this guy's doing this and he's doing that. So just for a dude, it's important to protect yourself. Like, you know, can I get in trouble for this? And if I could, then stop doing it, because it's just, you know what I mean? So I think conversations around that are really important, especially in the beginning, because they can create a life of its own, and then both people can be ruined by this experience, right?
Yeah. Which is uncomfortable for all parties. And then, but to go back to like non-dating relations on the street for women or anyone really, if there's someone being a little weird or aggressive, if you know, the classic stands tall with your shoulders back, like if there's someone on the SkyTrain that's acting weird and you're doing the classic, like looking down on your phone, like trying to look like, that could make you be unnoticed, which is what people are thinking, or it makes you look like an easy target and a victim.
Yeah.
And often when it depends on the nature, the mentally ill people are a little bit different, but non-mentally ill situations, you kind of want them to know that you know that they're there, but you don't want to like be staring at them because then they do the classic, like, what are you looking at? But if you just like glance and you're like paying attention, and people pick up on subconscious body stuff a lot. Like if they see you kind of moving away or you're orienting yourself to the door, you know, often they'll decide, okay, that person is paying attention to me. Now, if they're mentally ill, it creates all sorts of problems because they're not behaving rationally and they're not into these sort of patterns that people tend to follow. And that's a judgment call. I had a situation once. I was with a friend of mine, and this guy can fight, like Muay Thai fighter, grappler, all this sort of stuff. And they were new to Vancouver, and they'd never really encountered the mentally ill population here. And we were walking down the street, and this guy comes up and is like, hey, man, you got money? And, like, I've been around. I can tell that the guy's schizophrenic or something. I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. He's asking my friend, and like, we can take care of ourselves. He can ask a friend, like, hey, can I get some money? And, like, you know, you feel bad, you want to do it. I'm like, hey, man, let's just keep walking. He's like, no, man, you got to be nice. I'm like, I'm worried.
Yeah.
And, of course, is the guy, what my friend said was, hey, we're standing right next to Tim Hortons. He's like, I'll go in and buy you some food if that's what you want. I don't want to give you money. And of course, the guy's being aggressive with him.
Yeah, you get agitated when you do that. I used to offer that too. It'd get them all.
Yeah, my friend's of an ethnic background that he doesn't like being talked back to. So he starts getting aggressive. Right. And I'm like, dude, just walk away.
Leave it alone.
Right. And it's just, you have to kind of assess, like, if I ignore them, are they going to leave me alone? Which a lot of the time that is. But if you see them actively targeting people and touching people and being aggressive, well, then you could be next. In which case, if say you're on a SkyTrain, get off on the next stop. You also can hit the line on the SkyTrain. If you're on the bus, I would get off. I'm sorry, but those bus drivers are basically useless.
Yeah.
As far as helping you. I remember having, on that note, TransLink people are going to hate me. Many, many years ago, I was asked by someone, before they put in the COVID barriers, what can bus drivers do? This is when they were getting assaulted. I'm like, first of all, they need to stop being rude to people. Even if the
Seen bus drivers kind of stir up stuff, too.
Yeah. Second of all, they need to learn to be physical if need be. And the answer was, no, we're not doing that. I'm like, okay, well, then you need to do what every other country does and put up barriers to protect the drivers. Like, no, we're not doing that. Well, COVID made them do that, which is the correct safety mechanism when they can't fight, they can't get up, and they can't do anything. Because it's not going to be like Israel, where those bus drivers are trained and have handguns.
Right.
So have fun with that one.
Well, a lot of times when the bus drivers get attacked, too, which is really gross, they usually get spit on or they get sucker punched. It's usually when the guy's leaving and just the last minute he spits on them or her. And so, so I'm glad they have the barriers to protect themselves. Because, for years, like, especially in Vancouver, my God, when the bars are closed, the buses are just like another world. I've seen some of this insanity on there. Let's go back then to like martial arts and let's go back. So if a woman wants to do martial arts, right, and let's say she's in moderate shape, maybe goes to the gym and stuff like that, for her to be efficient just in generally where she feels that you feel that you can take like someone like I would say this on an athletic average to making them proficiently at defending themselves, how long would a process realistically would that be?
I obviously am inclined to recommend Krav Maga. I'm speaking for myself, not any other organization, not any other school locally. My beginner curriculum takes about 6 months to go through. So it gives you a good basic understanding. I would recommend a year at least so you go through it twice just to reinforce the ideas. And that skill level will be enough to avoid a lot of confrontations and has been enough for a lot of my students, whether they train with me or still with me or not. I get your stories. Oh, yeah, well, you taught me work. Even when they did other styles for years, because I'm not just training techniques. I'm training strategies and ways to think and understanding violence. I do a lot more talking than people are expecting in my beginner classes because they just hear Krav Maga is about aggression and kill. It is about aggression because, as I said, you have to learn to impose your will, and that can take time. Other martial arts will vary. Boxing, kickboxing, a year, 2 years, maybe on and off. Those styles also can be done a lot more casually. And boxing and kickboxing are excellent styles overall because they are the base of like striking in Krav Maga, to be honest. And they're the base of combat sports standing up. And you do, if you're proficient on your feet, then you can avoid the ground quite often. With that being said, anyone under 150 pounds who is concerned about self-defense situations needs to do grappling. Because of physics, you will end up on the ground, whether you like it or not, a larger percentage of the time. You know, they say all fights on the end of the ground end up on the ground. Maybe, maybe not. But if you're a smaller individual, it's more likely. Grappling, unfortunately, has a very long learning curve. And let's take Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because it's the most popular in Vancouver. In order to be proficient for self-defense, for most people, I would say you need a blue belt, which is the first level up. And a blue belt is 2 years dedicated training. So it takes the average
intense training of like really dedicating yourself.
Like 3, 4, 5 times a day. So most people get their blue belt in 3 to 5 years on average. Wow. That's just to be to understand grappling enough to keep someone away so you can get back to their feet. And that's how in my Krav Maga program, I approach grappling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people don't want to commit that time.
Yeah.
Now, let's say you're a police officer and you require grappling, then you should be looking at a purple belt or up in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Because now you don't just need to be good enough to keep them off of you. You need to be good enough to keep them down and controlled, which that's probably anywhere from 4 to 6 years, maybe 7 years on average. Like I have my brown belt, which is the next, it goes white, blue, purple, brown, black. 10 years to get my brown belt, and I'm a casual.
Wow, a whole decade to get your brown belt.
Casual practitioner. If you're doing every day all the time, then 6 years with your brown belt probably.
Wow.
So back to Krav Maga for a second. It's often sold as easy to learn. You can do a seminar, you're good to go. And
I really
don't like seminars unless I can get 4 hours to 8 hours, because. Wow. And I'll pick one topic to cover, because a lot of the people will come in and will never train again. And I want to truly flesh out the topic that we are discussing. The classic 1 or 2 hour seminar. I did Krav Maga this weekend for an hour. I'm good to go. No, you're not. You're delusional. And if that instructor said that you're good to go, never learn from them again. It should always be
get someone in trouble too. Like I remember over the years, like there was this crazy self-defense course that was teaching women, and this guy would wear this giant, almost like this giant foam helmet, and they'd kick him and punch him in the balls. And it's just like, you know what? I'm telling you, if you kick some dude in the balls who's 6'5" and drinking rye and whiskey all night long and doing coke, and he hates women because his wife just divorced him and took half of his stuff, it's not going to be the outcome that you hope for. It's actually, in my opinion, a very stupid thing to do. You know, and then some guys I've known, like I've known a lot of really blue collar guys. I've known a lot of really tough guys. Guys are really crazy, and they didn't know any martial arts or anything, but they can withstand a lot of pain. And they're crazy. Like they may not have some kind of good fighting technique, but they have a massive pain threshold. So that kind of stuff, pepper spraying, even broken bones, broken hands, broken noses, it's not going to faze them. And I wouldn't fight them. Like there's, you know, they could be scared. You know, there's some scary individuals out there. So teaching women with no fighting experience to go toe to toe with a big dude and then go right for his private parts is to me the most stupidest thing you can teach a woman.
Well, I'm gonna fight you on that one. The groin is an amazing target. The eyes are better. Here's the issue. It's not that the groin is the problem or the eyes are the problem. It's that what you do afterwards. So Krav Maga, or at least the way I teach it, is like, listen, if they're bigger than you and you need to use a strike like a groin kick or a throat punch or eye strike, what you're actually doing is getting them to pause for a second.
I totally agree with that.
And stand there or kick them and try to go toe-to-toe. You kick them, whatever, 5 seconds. Now you run away. Because if they're up in your face and they're not giving you the space to run away, then you need to do something physical to pause their mental processing. Because you're not going to take about like something like 0.25 seconds to from seeing something to acting and making a decision, although it's longer due to all that sort of stuff. I need to reset their ability to think. Even if it's for a second, I'm looking to create, for a beginner at least, to create a pause in the violence. So I can leave. And the groin is actually a very effective target. But what a lot of people misunderstand is that, you know, Krav Maga is aggression. You got to go fight hard. Well, if you have to. Mm-hmm. But if running is on the and they're bigger than you, you better be running. Because I have some MMA friends. And I know if I kick them in the nuts hard, it's going to stop them. But if I can't now run away from them real quick.
Yeah.
So it's about understanding the strategy and the tactics of how to apply the techniques.
Some guys that might work and it'll take them down. But I remember, like, I'll tell you a quick story. There was this dude who was known for being kind of a lunatic psycho. And back in East Vancouver, there was a popular, kind of like, they're almost like motorcycle boots. They were called Dayton's. and all the tough guys wore Daytons, and they would get extra soles on them. So they were like these thick biker boots with like double sole, square toe. And this guy kicked this other guy who was pretty psycho in the nuts. He did go down. He did kind of hold his breath for him, and his eyes did bulge. But the how angry he got after was like a nuclear bomb going off. He ended up beating the absolute, you know, the other guy was a tough guy too. So
in
now
a situation like that,
oh, you hurt me now. The cops, this is a bar I worked at, this guy named Randy. He was the most dangerous person I've ever had to deal with, and he was not what you would think. Would you think of a most dangerous person? He was 6'2", probably 170 pounds, skinny as a beanpole, long hair, mustache, looked like a crazy cowboy redneck, wore cowboy boots, super skinny. He was a world-class kickboxer who made it into the top 10 in his weight class. Cops warn us, don't pepper spray him. Don't pepper spray him, just pisses him off. And so what I'm saying in these kind of cases, some of these people have pain threshold that are beyond the average human being, and they're used to fighting. They like fighting. Pain doesn't bother them. And that's what I'm saying. And then something, you know, for in some of these cases, they're applied as an effect of one technique. Oh, just kick any dude in the balls. Well, don't. Maybe some dudes you don't want to do that.
No, absolutely not. I certainly don't teach that like that. What you're talking about is the exception, not the rule. Oh, and we have a bad habit in society of always looking at the exception, not the rule. In Canada, in Vancouver, again, in this country, not other countries, but in this country, 9 out of 10 times people are bluffing. 9 out of 10 times that groin kick will work. But, and I teach this, I'm preparing you for that 10th time that the groin kick didn't work, that the eye gouge didn't work. Now, it sounds like in that situation where the guy got groin kick and stopped. Well, if I know that this person is a crazy person, well, why am I hanging around them in the first place? If that's possible. Hit them and they pause. That's a chance. I get out now.
Yeah.
Or I use that pause and I unleash absolutely everything I have.
Oh,
you know, like,
sure. Yeah, totally. Follow up with some, you know, some haymakers or something.
And that still may not work. And I can say, as someone who has been bear maced in high school, I was assaulted, bear maced, and I have never seen two big thugs run that fast in my life because they came to my house. It was a, you know, high school nonsense. Maced me and my mother with bear mace with a fire extinguisher at my door. And they ran so fast because what I did was drop, got up, and sprinted at them. And they must have had, and this is before I know what to do. I just had anger problems as a teenager, like so many of us do. And I'm like, you know, are you kidding me? And I sprinted at them. They must have had a car waiting because by the time I was at the end of my lawn, they were nowhere to be seen. And it's like, it just shows you that these are like known guys, that were thugs and probably were paid to do. I'm suspect they were paid to come to my house. And a lot of them are actually cowards.
Yeah.
Because they don't expect people to get bear maced and charge them.
Yeah.
And that's actually a part of Krav Maga is, yes, you need to know when to run. Like, you cannot stress that enough. You have to know when to run. But for a lot of that, 9 out of 10 times, by you aggressively and immediately fighting back, will stop it. In the cases that you're talking about, because you work at a bar and because you're a bouncer, you're going to see those extremes, those exceptions.
Oh,
more often than the average person. And I know a couple of guys that are in that world of borderline gangster, and they're big and they're crazy, and their willingness to use violence is more than I'm comfortable with in a society with laws, because if I'm in another country, I'm going to kill them. And I'm not going to do that in Canada, because that's going to ruin my life. So I just avoid that whole situation because I would never – let's take ourselves out of the legal framework of Canada. Let's talk about just pure framework of actual one-on-one self-defense. If I find myself in a situation where I'm against a 250-pound enforcer for a mafia or a gang.
Yeah, scary.
I know they have a propensity for violence. In the world of self-defense, I need to go in with the mentality that I'm going to kill that person. But for the average person in the average situation and within the framework of a Western country like Canada, that's off the table. So you have to not find yourself in those situations. As you mentioned at the very beginning, unfortunately, Canada has a very messed up attitude towards self-defense and firearms. The attitude here by the government is that the government is responsible for your safety, end of story. And that's false. That's a false narrative, a false reality even.
Yeah,
Vancouver's police call to Metro Vancouver is around 5 to 7 minutes, which is pretty good, actually. So I'll give them credit. That's a pretty good call time. Like Seattle, last time I checked, was like 20, 30 minutes or longer.
My God.
But in 5 to 7 minutes, you're being assaulted now, and you will not be able to call them. And by the time you call them, it's too late. And if you're not severely injured, half the time they don't even follow them. They don't even follow up. When I was a teenager, if I hadn't been maced, I called multiple times about a bunch of like different groups of people that were in the same sort of thing about these guys are harassing me. It's like, no, we're nothing we can do. It's like preventative stuff, guys. If you don't start doing your jobs, it's preventative. And I don't blame them because they don't have the resources. And I blame the politicians. And the people
we've created a strange like political system here, and this is what I've observed, just kind of paraphrasing what you're saying. It's like on one side you created this political movement of defund the police, but then what's the alternative? If there's a crazy person with a machete, oh my God, call the cops, right? And then I always say this, it's like if you want to defund the police, then what happens when someone breaks in your elderly mother's house, or you're going to go and fight the burglary? So there's always like these kind of catchphrases, you know, save the environment, defund the police, but they're just empty. They have no follow up and no, meaning to them and no alternative. Yeah. Like as far as, okay, if you defund the police, then how do you stop criminals? Because they're growing here and they're getting worse and worse and worse. Right. So then on top of that, the laws are as such, you know, even carrying pepper spray is technically illegal unless you're afraid of dogs or something.
For dogs, for animal defense, not for human defense, yeah.
Yeah, so it's frustrating. And then on the teen side, there's this thing, massive violence as far as a teen. And then the teen side, that seemed to really explode. There's always been, you know, I grew up in Vancouver. There's always douchey teens. There's always these gangsters. And most of the gangsters were like more wannabe gangsters when I grew up. The scary ones were more in the background because they actually did real crime. They wanted to make money. But there seems to be this growth of wannabe gangsters that are just want to do stupid stuff and bear spray and make
shitty parenting
videos. And yeah, it's
stupid. Nobody wants to talk about it. It's bad parenting across the board. Just lot of parents are bad at what they're doing, and they have no male role models, and the schools have failed to provide role models for these people. And the schools used to be able to do that. Now they're just failing. Teachers are hands off. They're forcing political ideology rather than developing people to be good human beings. And, you know, back in the day, you know, you'd have, even a little bit before my time, but you know, you come home before dinner and that's fine. And it would be safe to do so. Now, if kids are roaming around like that, it's probably because they're troublemakers now. But back in the day, you would do that. Normally, you'd be on the streets walking around, and it's totally fine. I find if you want to take, well, I'm not an expert on this. The history of policing, the modern policing, I believe comes out of London, England. Mm. And it's basically that, you know, you have these street gangs all, you know, this block is run by this street gang, or like gangs in New York style.
Yes,
and modern policing came as a means of, we need to crush these groups who had no problem with violence. And back in the day, if you think cops are abusive now, you go back 150 years, they had permission to kick in doors, knock out teeth, because their job was to clean up the nonsense.
Yeah,
and eventually, but the cops were, like, this is before the 1900s, their job was to scare people away from violence. And it largely worked.
Yeah.
And we got modern day police. Yeah.
Well, even the back in the day, we used to have more modern beat cops. Like, my older brother, the cops were very different in Vancouver. They would hire tough guys, and they had a height requirement. And my brother's, his friends were like cowboys. They would meet cops off duty, and because they'd beef with each other. Oh, you think you're tough? Oh, you think you're tough? Oh, you're only tough because you have a badge and a gun. Okay, I'll take my badge and gun off. They would actually meet in parking lots and have fist fights. Yeah. Like, you know, it's totally different time. The cops when I was a kid were definitely more gruffer. They didn't take any stuff. These tricks, like the telephone book trick, things like that. Yeah. If people know what that is, the elevator.
I want to be careful in this pop, but because I want people to understand. In the modern world, that's not appropriate. I just wanted to bring up the history of policing and where it comes from. Yeah. And the idea was that we have a police force who is going to deal with violent people.
Oh, totally. And that's my point, right? So it's almost like you had to have people that can handle, like, you know, again, they would, and like I say, I don't think cops should meet guys in the parking lot and have fist fights, no, but
it's not appropriate.
Unless they do it on pay-per-view, that'd be kind of fun if they did it on pay-per-view.
But here's the thing. Nowadays, there's two things that I would like to see, or three. I want to see stop wasting billions of dollars on ideological nonsense. You put the money into the hospital system and fix it. You commit healthcare. You put the money into creating more police, community policing, who are trained to handle people.
Health,
And mental health.
Yeah.
You take these trillions and billions of dollars are thrown around and all this crap that nobody asked for. You put it into those three main topics, and Canada will be the best country in the world. And in the absence of some real strong political leadership that cuts the bullshit, you're going to have to understand that as the population of a country like Canada goes up, or the city of Vancouver goes up, there's going to be less police to deal with the violence. And you're going to have to start to be able to defend yourself. I'm not talking about taking justice into your own hands. I'm talking about being able to defend yourself in the moment. And the way our system works, and while you are legally allowed to use self-defense, even potentially lethal force in Canada, but I really don't recommend that under the current law set.
Yeah, you're going to be in court for a long time.
You're going to be in court for years and potentially jail, even if you were justified. But the thing is, if I go around to the average Canadian and I ask, if someone, I'm not talking about Vancouver lefties because they believe things about violence that are false, but if someone kicks in my door in the middle of the night, they are now taking their life into their own hands. If I ask the average person, could I shoot them or could I stab them in self-defense? Their honest answer is going to be yes, because most people don't know what the self-defense laws are in here. Right. Now, if I go ask the police or the politician, they'll be like, no, that's unacceptable behavior in Canada. But I'm sorry, we're in common law. And this is where castle laws in the States come. They use force to come into my house. Too damn bad. I don't care if you were abused as a child. I'm sorry that happened to you. It shouldn't have. I don't care if you had a tough upbringing. I don't even care if you're doing it for resources because you need to survive. Sure. By using force to kick into my property, the average Canadian will actually say that I can use force back. We're in common law. If I ask enough people that question and they tell me that I'm allowed to use force, potentially even lethal force, to fend that person off, that should be the law of the land. But when I talk to the politicians and the people in power who can afford security guards and, you know, armed security, expensive fences, who they don't have to worry about.
No.
They're so far removed from violence.
Yes.
In the absence of a quality community police force and quality mentorship programs for youth, you're going to have violent people on the rise. I remember the mayor of London, I don't know if he's still the mayor of London, but he was, when London had the huge knife attacks in London, his attitude was, well, when you have a city population like this, the violent crime is just going to go up, and you're just going to have to learn to accept that. And it's like, what?
Yeah, but they don't have to accept it, like you're saying, right? It's like if you have armed guards, bodyguards, limousines with drivers, security guards, gated, when they go out, they usually eat in the VIP, and if it's a restaurant, they have a private room. So, yeah, they have full security. Take their security away, they'd have a different tune. One of my complaints for the longest time, for as long as I've been doing Vancouver True Crime, and even before that, was the lack of accountability that judges have in BC. They can let out the most violent, vicious criminals that have done machete attacks, and then they're shocked they don't show up in their courtroom for their court appointment. Like, are you serious? This guy just attacked someone with a machete. You think he cares about your appointment?
I think are, and I'm going to get in a lot of trouble, I think a lot of them are cowards, because I'll tell you a story I was told by someone I know who was working in the court system. I don't know the details of the case, but this is how they explained it to me. It was clearly rape. The evidence was clearly rape. Everyone said it was rape. The judge said, I cannot convict because it requires setting precedents, and I am not doing that. Precedents, for those who don't know, is when a judge makes a decision that if it sticks and isn't challenged, becomes the basis for law and common law, or part of the basis for law. And the judge was basically being a coward and was not willing to convict someone who everyone was like, he is guilty, this person is guilty, because he didn't want to take the flack of, or she, I actually don't know, he or she judge, there's male and female. And it's like, are you kidding me? And I hear more and more of these stories. And let's look at the, and look, let's look at America for a second. And I hate it when Canadians look at America and compare to Canada and think it's the same. It's not. They're two separate things. But I just want to talk about states in America where they have taken this soft on crime approach, no cash bail. What they're trying to do is good intention. We don't want guilty people or people to be stuck in jail just because they can't afford a lawyer. I'm fine with that. But when you start saying this person was a violent offender and they're a repeat violent offender, and I'm going to let them out of holding because of some idea, they almost always reoffend before their next court date because they're like, I might as well.
Yes, they don't care.
And in cities in the States where they have taken the soft on crime revolving door attitude, crime has gone through the roof. And everyone blames the guns. It's not the guns. It's the policies.
Yes.
And there are, and I'll, to be fair, as much as I have problems with our healthcare system, you can get mental health resources here. You can get support here. Even if it's a pain in the ass and a nightmare bureaucratic, you can get help. In the States, a lot of people who need help medically or mentally cannot get help. So you add the mental health crisis in the States where these people can't get help at all, the increased poverty in a lot of these cities due to bad policy, overtaxation, and then you add on these bad policies to do with crime, and it's basically like I joke to people like LA is going to become like Kurt Russell's Escape from LA,
totally.
Because it's getting absolutely insane that your governments are failing
the
minimum job and keeping things safe. You know, and this to a lot of people who are listening to this, they and a lot of people who come to my class, and I'll talk about this stuff. They're like, I just wanted to come and learn to kick someone in the groin. That's what self-defense is wrong. Self-defense, aside from the physical of I need to punch this person now to get him out of my space, is understanding, is your city more violent today than it was yesterday? I need to avoid this area. Self-defense, understanding, hey, if I'm going traveling to, let's say, Thailand, which is a good destination, well, what if I went a few years back when they had a military coup? And you didn't know that.
Yeah,
and you showed up, or Myanmar, and you travel, or you're like, I'm going to go to Africa, and a lot of places in Africa are great, but very careful. I'll tell you, you posted a video the other day of, it was an ATM robbery with a knife.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, the knife one, yes.
Reposted it and asked the question, what would you do, or what do you think? And I had a friend of mine, I was very annoyed, who's a very skilled martial artist. And he's like, you can't do anything, they have a knife. And I said, I saw like three opportunities to run. There were opportunities to run and run. He could have taken his bag off and used it as... There were actually, in that case, I saw the attacker as not actually being that willing to use the knife. That's what I read that. And there were tons of opportunities to do something. Person I was arguing with was like, no, there's nothing you can do. You always give them what they want. Wrong.
Yeah.
Giving them what may be the correct decision. Keyword may. And to be honest, in Vancouver, a lot of the time it may. If they're on crack or on their drug and they're robbing, give them what they want and they're twitchy.
Yeah.
What do Canadians like to do? They like to travel. Well, in a lot of these places, it's easier for them to kill you now and not have a witness. So I was explained this once. So in America and Canada, most armed robberies, it's not worth it for them to kill you. Because in a lot of these cities with high crime, now Vancouver is not like this, but other cities, if particularly in America, if they just rob you, the criminal knows, even if it was armed assault, cops aren't going to come after
yeah.
them. But if
yeah.
they kill you,
yeah, then it's
they're going to come after In yeah. other countries, it's sometimes the opposite. If they're the foreign witness, that person is screwed.
Oh, God.
Or their friends will be screwed because the cops know the group of people. So it's easier for them to kill you because there's no cameras everywhere.
Yeah, it's just your gun.
Oh, yeah, here you go. And then they kill you because they just didn't want to search for all your stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's black and white. Now, in the situation you posted, and I'm not saying that giving the person the stuff was the wrong decision, but I saw that person was actually resisting quite a bit. And probably
He was kind of pushing back, and they were kind of like a tug of war over the backpack.
Yeah. But the idea is that it's black and white. Just give them what they want. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe that'll get you killed. You have to make a decision.
Yeah, every situation is different. Like you said, he could freeze his first time having a knife at him. The guy was kind of like a big ogre, a lot bigger than him, kind of towering over him. He seemed, you know, in hindsight, like for myself, if I in that situation, I probably would have tried to shove him as far as I could and get that, you know, create distance.
And you could have. There was opportunity from what I saw.
But yeah, you know, it's tough. And in a lot of these cases too, though, it's like, again, like what we're talking about, it's like these situations seem to come up from behind. This, you know, I know where that ATM is, and it's in the not in the worst area, but there's better banking machine options in that area. There's banks. There's a lot of banks that are open that have inside ATMs. I personally wouldn't have used that one, but just because it is vulnerable. You walk in, your back is turned, you're in kind of a doorway. There's no door behind you. At least in some banks, at least someone has to open a door, and they need their card to open the door. So, you know, not blaming the victim, but just for security reasons, I would have been pulling cash out of that location.
Well, yeah, me too. Situational awareness. And I should be fair, and I tell my students a lot. And it depends. If you're always in the downtown east side, or you're always in, you know, Wally area in Surrey or wherever, you're going to have a perception. And now, it is getting worse. We both agree on that. And it's getting worse to the point where it's unacceptable. But comparatively, Vancouver is still relatively safe. Compared to like Southside Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Or parts of London or parts of New York. So in Vancouver specifically, if you're very situationally aware, like don't use that ATM, for example, it is very difficult to find yourself in these situations. But here's the thing. Pre-pandemic, I like to go to nice restaurants. Some of my favorite restaurants are in the downtown east side because that's all these restaurants can afford. So you're going to like, you know, 5-star restaurants in the shittiest part of town. So I want to be cultured and go to these places, but you have to, go to a really bad part of town. So, you know, you can still do that in Vancouver, but you have to keep your wits about you. But when I talk self-defense, I talk on a global scale. Is you can't just think about how you and your own culture would react. You have to think, you know, broader. And I had someone say to me, like, have you ever been robbed at a knife? And I was like, no, I have not, because I make smart decisions. I don't do things like that. And they're like, well, then you don't know what you're going to do. I'm like, listen, man, you do realize I was a soldier and I dealt with riot control and arrests. I know how I'm going to react under stress. But they were hung up on the fact that they didn't react when they were held at knife. And coming back to Krav Maga training, while it is true, if you've never experienced any kind of violence, you don't know how you're going to react until it happens.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Training can compensate for that because you train your nervous system and you train your reactions to just do it so that even if you panic, you're like,
you can go into autopilot also.
You can go into autopilot. And that's the difference. Again, Krav Maga versus generic self-defense training. You need to train like that. And it does come out of the military where I'm not training my basic classes as if they're military, but I'm taking the same sort of the approach. Principles.
Yeah.
To train you now to react now, and I'm going to overwhelm you, and there are days that my students may even cry or may even be like, you know, screw you, John, I'm so angry at you. So hard. Not always. Some of my classes are easy, some of them are not. I balance it. We are in Canada. But I need to push you to your limits sometimes because I need you to know what your limits are. So that
coaching you can push past them.
You can either push past them but that's sometimes not true, but you understand where you're at. Like if you're in class and you start getting overwhelmed, well, now you know.
Yeah.
Now you know if you start feeling like that in a social situation, you need to calm down and remove yourself because you've learned in my class, I get overwhelmed at this point. Or if you're in a violent situation and it's not even close to the level I pushed you, you're like, oh, I can handle this. I know this. I had a story, a former student told me that she was in Montreal. And I'll talk about this point about never, ever, ever let yourself be taken to a second location. Right. Ever.
Oh, God.
Statistically, once you're out in a second location, it's over. Bad. And so this student of mine was in Montreal. Knowing them, I'm assuming they were drinking. They got into the back of what they thought was a cab.
Oh, no.
Cab driver, it was not a cab.
Oh, God.
I'm filling in some blanks here, but I guess was trying to take them somewhere. And they even had the plexiglass window a little bit.
Wow.
And she said to me, I heard your voice say, never let them take you anywhere. And she started screaming at the guy, reached through the plexiglass, started choking him, demanding to be let out, and he let them out. Right? Wow. And they're not the most skilled physically person. Sorry if you're listening, they may be. But, you know, they're an orange belt under me. So they've been training enough that they understand I can turn that switch on and I need to turn it on now.
Well, let's break that down again, because that's important, right? So especially for the female audience, and even for like boy, you know, this predators do target boys and men too, especially smaller ones. So we say a secondary location. What do you mean by that?
So if you get someone pulls a gun or knife or just grabs you, and I'm just standing in the park, when they say, come with me, the classic example is the ice cream pedophile van, the brown panel one. Okay, well, you go get the ice cream while they're creepy. That's the end of that story. You leave. The moment you get into that van and they start driving, done.
Yeah.
The moment they take you anywhere else, it's done. There's a couple of reasons for this. There's a psychological factor of that once you're in their realm.
Yes, they have more control. They have
the control. Mm-hmm. And two, you are now fighting an uphill battle because you don't know what's going on. You don't know where you are. You don't know the exits potentially.
Yeah, and this is probably their first time, and they have everything worked out, right? You know, so again, when you're both, to avoid being taken to the secondary location, the thought is that you got to do whatever it takes so you're not taken to the...
Once they grab a hold of you and it's clear, I mean, fight back anyway, but once it's clear they're trying to take you somewhere, you bite, you scratch, you whatever, you scream, you flail, although controlled flailing, because just the crazy flailing often is not enough. You got to flail at them, go for their eyes, throws, kick, move, because statistically for targeted serial killers, the people who do get away, again, it's not a common situation, and people need to calm down about the Netflix, you know, podcasts like yours are actually the most popular because there's a theory behind this that say suburb women love it because they're so safe. They're like, but what if I need to learn about this? And I saw this hilarious joke the other day. It was like, if police just turned their investigation departments into crime podcasts, there would be no unsolved crimes.
Yeah.
Because you have an army of women, because it is mostly women and men, doing the research and tracking down. It's kind of like Amber Alert.
My audience is 60% women, and then 39% men, and then 1% of genders that...
That actually brings, like, Amber Alert is an extremely successful program for children. Anyone who gets mad at the Amber Alert... In the middle of the night, is an immoral human being. If it goes off in the middle of the night, there's a reason.
Yeah, what if it was your kid or someone else's kid in your family?
What the Amber Alert essentially is a community-wide alert. We need everyone's eyes on this now. And quite frankly, for even adults, that might be a useful thing. The reason why they don't is likely because that thing would be going off all the time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But perhaps a silent Amber Alert is an option. Anytime someone actually goes missing, because a lot of times, where do they find these people? They suicided themselves, adults, or they're dead. Because
just because something popped in my head, a woman went missing. I think she was in Edmonton. Yeah, young. I think she was like a late teen. I think 17, if memory serves me correct. She went missing, And they found her in Portland, Oregon, within less than 2 days. Basically, this guy groomed her online, drove to Edmonton, picked her up, and drove her back down.
Yeah.
But that's saying, look how far she got in two days. But there was a high profile, lots of people sharing it on social media and stuff. They found her in Portland, Oregon. I was shocked how far she got.
Yeah. It's hard for some people because they get into the paranoid realm. But Amber Alert is a good example. It's like there's a report out that this is a problem. Alert everybody.
Yeah.
It gets solved a lot quicker. Crowds is extremely powerful.
You know, even on my platform, right, I posted, you know, people and, oh, my God, I saw him. I messaged the family and say, oh, yeah, there was a sighting. And then next thing you know, they were able to relocate. And so when I was able to be on the receiving end of it, it's truly amazing. And then on the other side of it too, it's horrible where there's like these big batches, and I'm digressing, where like in the summertime, a lot of women went missing and not a lot of them were found, especially like in the Okanagan area, but it's a whole different thing. And it's scary because again, it's like, where could they be? They could be suicides. It could be this. They could be, you know, emotional health, or there could be someone active getting them, right? Of course, your mind wants to go to the most extreme scenario. But like I said, like you were saying, if there was more proactive missing person bulletins, it would help, you know, it would help. Because in some cases, too, it's just like, oh, my God, they've been missing for 2 weeks. And then finally people are putting stuff out. And then a lot can happen in 2 weeks. You know, before we go, though, is, again, just to kind of wrap this up, is talking about accountability. So from all the things we talked about, you know, from self-defense to the police to society, it comes down to accountability. And I think there's a couple issues here. I feel that courts and political parties don't want to take accountability to a very serious situation that's happening. Vancouver is becoming more violent and becoming more scary, and maybe not as scary as Chicago yet or Detroit or Baltimore, but random stuff is occurring more often. And, you know, I get direct testimonials that of victims that say this stuff has happened. Then there comes accountability of how do we protect ourselves? You know, do we take martial arts? Do we look at getting a weapon? And that puts you in a different legal realm. I'm telling you, if you go out and buy a retractable baton and then I'm carrying it around, and then the first opportunity I get into a confrontation with someone, I pull up this retractable baton and beat his head in, I'm probably going to be doing some jail time.
Yep.
So maybe a better alternative, like from where you discussed, is situational awareness, avoiding these situations with volatile people in the first place, right? And then accountability of learning how to protect yourself. If you're a woman, learning how to be more assertive, telling people, no, you're creeping me out, back off, right? Yep. I've worked with a lot of women, and, you know, especially in the business, IT world, who are very good at that. And they weren't big women, but they were very good at, like, teenagers, young men, older men, martial arts is good for you. Learning self-defense is healthy. It's something that's going to give you more self-esteem, self-worth. You're going to look better. You're going to lose some weight. You're going to feel better, and you're going to stand out, and you're going to come across differently to people. When I see people just in general that are confident in their ability to protect themselves, they usually kind of present an aura and about them that, hey, don't poke this person. He'll fight back. He'll bite back. And that sometimes that's enough. Sometimes that's enough, right? So.
Yeah, just, you know, when I was young, and I honestly didn't know what I was doing in high school, but I hung around some questionable people. But every once in a while, there'd be a guy. I didn't know them, or I did, and I'm like, I think I just pissed that guy off. Mm-hmm. I need to leave now, because I've heard the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing that people don't want to do. So, like, accountability makes smart decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk all you want about, well, that a person shouldn't have attacked me, okay? But they did. So in the end of the day, the personal accountability is fundamentally your personal safety is yours to be responsible for, and or that of your children, because, you know, young children can't always take care of themselves in that. But you should still teach them, you know, awareness and realizing that as much as, even if you're one of those people who loves government and loves the state control and loves all that, well, I'm not going to agree with you on that, but 5 to 7 minutes or something along that lines is the call time here. And often, unless there's a weapon present, and that's assuming you can get on the phone, they're not coming fast enough.
No.
So you need to learn how to physically manage yourself and make smart decisions so you don't panic so you're able to run. Avoidance is best.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be healthy because everyone's like, I'll just run. It's like, can you run for a block?
About being winded. You? You know?
A lot of people can't. You have to think about that. You know, and elderly people, it's not, they're just getting older. They can't run. So they have to make smarter decisions about where they are and what they're doing. Unless you've kicked amazing shape, because I've heard stories, you know, 7-year-old person defends themselves. So staying physically in shape, making smart decisions. If you think you're going to, I mean, I think everyone should do martial arts no matter what, even if it's just for physical literacy. Even if it's a style I think is a bit of a joke, I would rather you do that for physical literacy.
Yeah, for health. Yeah.
And then with experience of dealing with violence, you also learn, like, even if I'm trained, I still can't deal with that person. They're too big. Even if I'm trained, I am confident that I can hold my own for a second. Or maybe I tell my students often, when you train long enough and you're so used to training with people who know what they're doing, you'll end up in a little bit of a tussle, even a minor one, with someone who doesn't know what they're doing. And next thing you know, they're on the ground and you're just looking like, I didn't even do anything, because you're so much more physically capable.
Yeah, technique drilled down really well. And
then you're like, cool, fight's over. We're done here. But you do have to keep an eye on them, because often you turn your back thinking it's done. It's not. So you do have to be careful. You just can't rely on others or the government to take care of your personal responsibility. They're there to deal with those gangsters and to deal with organized crime. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, you just don't. There's no time. So I know people don't want to hear that, but you have to learn to defend yourself on your own, because that's the worst case scenario. And it may be 6 months, a year, 2 years of training. And I know people don't have time, don't want to do that. But an hour a week or an hour every 2 weeks is better than nothing.
Yes.
You know, the classic I get people, men and women, I'm going to come, I'm going to train every day, and I'm going to be here. And I, as the instructor, I'm like, I'm never going to see you past 2 weeks. Just go, just show up, no expectations, just keep training, show up. Eventually, it'll kick in, and you find, and hopefully you don't find yourself in a situation. But, you know, if you live downtown Eastside or East Vancouver or other parts, you are at a higher percentage chance. I had a student once who was jumped by Antifa,
who
is now designated as a terrorist group in the state. But they did exist here, and it's their fault, because the initial thing is because they're always picking fights with those people, so that aspect was their fault.
Right. So it kind of stirred the plot up.
Stirring the plot. So they targeted them.
Oh, my God.
And what he noticed was he got jumped and beat up, not too badly, but beat up. Yeah. And their comment was, several people walked by and nobody helped.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to North America. People are not going to help.
Yeah, you can't just rely on someone going to be helping you.
They started to train, and they started doing quite well. But again, whether they make the smart decision of don't antagonize these people who are looking for violence, if you know anything about Antifa, these people are not mentally stable, and they're looking for
They were kind of a phenomenon there for a while, and it's just kind of like, again, when they first came out, I was just like, what the hell's this? And then,
well, they're terrorists now, so they're gone.
we live in strange times. Like, it's just like, it definitely, things are more volatile politically. People don't want to talk to each other that have different political points of views, or just in general, we want to, if someone disagrees with us, instead of like having a dialogue of maybe understanding where they're from, maybe it's to tear them down. They're this, they're that, they're misogynistic, they're all the patriarchy, whatever it is, whatever thing that they want to post on them, why they're a bad person. And it's an interesting time. It is. And I think more importantly, people have to take accountability for themselves or family. And also, you know, learn to, people don't all think like them.
Yeah.
You know, just the way
and just
are.
Accept it and be like, you know what? I'm not going to agree with that person, and walk away. Most people in the 21st century are going to leave you alone. The moment you start going after each other actively, like I stopped posting on Facebook page because I noticed that people would go at the people who don't agree with me would like gang up and start like.
Oh yeah, no, my construction has been ferocious lately. Yeah. I'm just like, Christ.
I just post all my stuff now on stories because you know who looks at stories? The people who actually care about what you're posting.
Yeah.
Not the trolls, because what the trolls want is other people jumping in and comment and acknowledge that they're trolling.
My comment section has been ferocious lately too, and it's just like, God, I don't want to get to the point where turning off comments, but it's just like, and some of the people too, I'm surprised too, because it's like, you know, and again, I don't mean to go on a different direction, but you know, they have well-established pages, some of them have even businesses, and they're selling stuff, and all their e-commerce, and they come on my page, and it's vile, just like this fire hose of vile, and like, I'm like, because I imagine if I went to your business page, and bought one of your products and wasn't really happy and decided to fire hose all my discontent.
Just remember,
page, you know,
don't pay attention to the comment section because what it is, it's a business decision and an emotional one. Is the more active your comments are and your account interacts with other accounts.
I actually barely ever comment. I'll DM people like directly and have a private conversation, but I rarely get in there. Well, I got to run. I got to deal with my children, but it was nice talking to you, John. I'd like to do this again. Maybe down the road we can break down more like situations or like maybe best tactics to do in certain situations, something like that.
Absolutely. Just give me a heads up.
The audience if they want to take your martial arts or self-defense classes, how do they look you up? How do they find you? Of course, I'll post it and I'll put anything, but.
So I'm Urban Tactics Krav Maga. I have space actually and another martial arts through Budo Martial Arts Burnaby. So if you want to learn, you're in Burnaby, Burnaby Heights, they do jujitsu and I teach Krav Maga. We're separate programs, but we share the space. So that's Hastings. UrbanTacticsKM.com is my website. I also have a blog, utkmblog.com, for those interested. Sometimes since I have a kid, I'm posting a lot less right now. I'm sure you understand. If you want to sign up, UrbanTacticsCam.com, and I have a bit of a waiting list now because there's more demand right now, but usually it's a few days to a week or two. I just need to, you know, a couple people at a time to start. You can check me out on social media, Instagram, Urban Tactics Krav Maga, or Facebook, Urban Tactics Krav Maga, or...
I'll make a post, too.
I also have a podcast that interviews... I haven't done it in a while, again, kid, but Where Is Den podcast. I talk to... either friends or other martial artists and Krav Maga people from all over the world sometimes.
Awesome.
I need to start doing it again, but newborn, yay.
All right, John, take care. Thank you for talking about everything, and we'll be in touch soon.
Yeah, you have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.